Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Mickey Huff, Project Censor Director. I'll give him a proper introduction in just a moment. Let me just begin making a few comments. I spend most of my time writing. Oh, I get a lot of interviews myself and, of course, my own program 3 times a week, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. They're all live, and they're archived for people who can't listen live but want to follow the program. They can do it anytime by going to the Progressive Radio Network website, click Archives, scroll down to the Progressive Radio News Hour, or any other PRN program you want to listen to anytime you want. It's terrific programming. It's the kind of programming that should be everywhere in the mainstream. The mainstream should be this kind of programming. Instead, the mainstream programming is what I call scoundrel media. Can't think of a better way to describe them. But I spent my entire morning writing. I'll do more writing after the program. Just a quick word about Venezuela. Nothing much reported in the media about Venezuela. A little bit in print. I'm not certain if there's been much on television. I don't follow TV news. If there has been any, it certainly hasn't been what people need to hear. But Hugo Chavez, on the 11th of December, underwent his fourth cancer operation in 18 months. Certainly not a good sign. He's struggling to recover. I've put out a number of articles on it. A new one I put out today. It's already going up on websites. It's on my blog site. It's on the Daily Censored site. And this morning I wrote another one. It'll go out tomorrow. I also, when I do this, I don't just want to talk about the situation of Chavez's health, which is certainly of concern, but I do want to point out that the major media, with no evidence whatsoever, puts out false reports. They use unnamed sources. They fear-monger. There's no corroboration whatsoever for what they say. Who knows what exactly the situation is? Only Chavez's doctors know what's happening, and of course they know it from day to day, and they know it as they're treating him. He's had post-operative problems. It's not uncommon to have them. Many people have post-operative problems. Two earlier ones were corrected. A lung infection came up. It was described by people who know as serious. Serious does not mean not correctable. Hopefully it will be corrected. I cover this in my article. It'll go out tomorrow. And I also talk about Bolivarianism. Bolivarianism, Chavismo, progressive politics. That's what it is. That's what they represent. That's what Chavez represents. That's what's become institutionalized in Venezuela. I've compared it before. I do briefly again in my article tomorrow the difference between Venezuela under Chavez and U.S. politics. Just a quick word about them, and then we'll get on with Mickey. We got the whole hour. Mickey will indulge me just a few comments. End of the year, a couple of days into January, reports said, we went over the fiscal cliff. There is no fiscal cliff. It was a hoax. Went over nothing. The so-called end-of-the-year deadline was no deadline at all. Congress, between January 1 and midnight, December 31, can pass any laws it wants. If it's signed before midnight by Obama or any other president, it could be made retroactive to January 1. That's the law. Well, Congress passed a mini-law. It avoided what is coming, this so-called grand bargain. That's the language they used. Reports said they didn't come up with a grand bargain that they claimed they would do. Well, they will. They will. They're doing it piecemeal. They did the easy stuff first. They gave everybody a tax increase. Everybody who's working, that is. You know, Obama said, We gave working people a tax cut. Well, he saved sacking Medicare, Social Security, Medicare, and public pensions for later on. That's planned. That's part of the budget cuts. They're going to come incrementally, probably backloaded. Whether any will come this year, I sort of doubt it. Possible, maybe a little bit. But the big stuff is coming later. It'll be backloaded to 2014, 15, 16, 17, ad infinitum. And by the time they get done, we're in 2013. By 2023, maybe earlier, I guarantee Social Security, Medicare, public pensions, and Medicaid either will have entirely disappeared or they will look so different from today, they will be unrecognizable. That's the plan. That's the grand bargain. That's the heavy lifting that hasn't been done yet. The tax increase, everybody who's working got a payroll tax increase, 4.2 to 6.2%. For most Americans, if you can believe this, it amounts to around or maybe more than a 50% tax increase. Many working people earn so little, they pay little or no taxes. You sock them with the payroll tax, and they're going to be hit with a big tax they never should be hit with in the first place. But when 2 years ago, when the payroll tax was cut, I wrote about it. I discussed it in my Wall Street book, How Wall Street Fleeces America. It was an absolutely abominable idea to cut the payroll tax. Why was it done? It was done for one reason. It wasn't done to give people a tax break primarily. It was done to raid the Social Security Trust Fund, to weaken it en route to destroying it altogether. I'm surprised they raised the payroll tax to 6.2%. But at the time, 2 years ago, I said there are much better ways to give people tax relief, and I discussed some responsible ways. They didn't need to attack the Social Security Trust Fund, but they did. So anyway, we got through what they call fiscal cliff. I call it fiscal cliff doublespeak duplicity. That's what it is. Obama signed the law. I think he did it. He did it in Hawaii. I think he still, don't know if he came back. I think he may still be in Hawaii. I think he signed it while he was over there. Either yesterday, I think it was yesterday. It was a done deal. So the heavy lifting, the light lifting is over. The major lifting is left to go. The major lifting is budget cutting. What will be targeted? What doesn't the major media report? The so-called fiscal cliff duplicity is this in a nutshell. It's a scheme to destroy America's social contract. Ever read that in the New York Times? Ever hear that on CNN? Has the BBC ever reported it? Did National Public Radio ever do it? What about the Lira Hour? Not a chance. That's the nub of the whole deal. Destroy America's social contract. Go after the big ticket items. Transform or entirely get rid of, I said it, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, public pensions, HEMA, food stamps, the entire social safety net. Do it incrementally over time. Do it like boiling a frog. It doesn't know its dinner until it's served. That's the dirty scheme. That's what the scoundrel media don't report. That's what I wrote about in about 8 articles. Mickey, welcome to the program. Mickey is director of Project Censored. Mickey, we want to talk about Project Censored. Oh, you're also a professor of history at the Diablo Valley College. You've been on a number of times before. Regular listeners know who you are. And you're also very much involved in the Media Freedom Foundation with Peter Phillips. Peter will be on tomorrow. We'll talk a lot more about what's on Peter's mind. We'll talk about the Project Censored book. And you emailed me, Mickey, on things you want to talk about in terms of what's new at Project Censored. Welcome, Mickey. I didn't mean to take that much time. I did. Let me let you jump in and comment.
Oh, no worries, Stephen. It's always a pleasure to be on with you. And again, you are one of the busiest people writing in terms of independent journalism, sometimes churning out a couple articles a day. So we're certainly happy to have you posting some things over at the Daily Censored site. And your introduction was quite apt and relevant to our discussion this morning on framing, doublespeak, duplicity. All of these things are forms of propaganda, and propaganda is a form of censorship. And so, again, I think it's entirely apropos that you discussed the many things that you already have. And, again, it's a delight to be here.
Oh, Mickey, it's great to have you. And the spirit of Project Sense, it inspires me. I must say that virtually every day I put out a couple of articles. How I get it done, I don't know. I wake up in the morning, Mickey. Usually I have no idea in the world what I'm going to write about. I do my usual due diligence search to see what headlines pop up in front of me. I check some of my favorite websites, just a handful I go to, and I see what's percolating. And from that I say, aha, I have to say something about this. Aha, I've got to cover this as well. Sometimes it's three or four things, and unfortunately I only have two hands and so many hours in the day.
Well, that's right, Stephen. We all do what we can. And, of course, Project Censored, we've been around 36 years. Your listeners may know of us. You can go to projectcensored.org to learn more. You know, we have a real collective effort afoot here over the last several decades. And I think that that's in the spirit also of a different type of journalism and really a different type of society than the one we see depicted in both corporate media and trumpeted from corporate textbooks and, you know, so-called lessons on civics about how things ought to be. But there's very little attention paid to how things really are. The fact that we live under really a managed, newsed, propagandistic type of information disseminating structure in the United States, and the fact that democracy really is a ruse, and folks like Noam Chomsky and others have referred to it as a necessary illusion. I mean, you can go back to the early 20th century to people like Eddie Bernays and Walter Lippmann to talk about the need to, sort of cull the bewildered herd and manipulate public opinion so that there, again, appears to be a semblance of actual democratic participation and choice, when in reality that choice is incredibly controlled. And again, this collective effort that we play, you know, America is built on many different mythologies. Prime among them, however, are exceptionalism, triumphalism, and also the trumpeting also of the superiority of the individual. And what's curious about that is, on one hand, how we certainly cherish individual liberty, we know that we can't have these things without a collective sense of liberty and collective senses of freedom in our society. And while that is alluded to periodically in our national political theatrical exposés, like the election that took place in November, you'll recall the Republicans riffing on the notion of we built this. That's making a mockery of the collective nature of our society. It's making a mockery of the collective nature that's required to really vet and collect information to inform each other about what's really going on in our society. And again, back to Project Censored, what we do is we work with people all over the U.S. We have at various times had people working with us from over 30 different colleges and universities, from junior colleges, state colleges, private colleges, to upper-tier universities, even, to use the language of the academy, which I don't always agree with, but nevertheless, we have a wide range of people to participate in Project Censored. Of course, you have been honored in the book, many other independent journalists, hundreds of independent journalists, have been honored in our book, meaning, and when I say honored, I mean elevated. We are reaching out and celebrating the independent journalists, the people that really have the drive, the wherewithal, the desire to tell people what's really going on in the world around us. And especially in a place like the United States that operates under this guise of a free press, it's ever more important that we have people really trying to exemplify free press principles rather than simply outsourcing it to the so-called experts and professional classes. And I know that draws the ire of some communication scholars and professional journalists, because it sounds like it's belittling the professionalization that's involved in journalistic practices. And that's not exactly what I mean. What I mean is that it also requires citizen journalists and other trained people to not be beholden to other powerful interests, owners, advertisers, government sources, corporate leaders, essentially the plutocracy. We need a vernacular narrative type storytelling in our society, because we're a very diverse society. And so Project Censored, again, really champions the diverse voices we have in our society. Again, I say that we have hundreds of students that research stories with us every year. We also have people doing original research and investigative research. We have scores of professors that work to vet these stories, and other people across the United States that are knowledgeable in various fields. So all in all, I'd say, you know, Project Censored, to me, is really a great eclectic example of both being the media, as David Matheson said in a book of the same name, Be the Media, and it's also a way of really bolstering journalistic principles. Not a way of attacking them, but a way of really lauding them and encouraging the public as well to be a media-literate body. So again, we are more capable of understanding propaganda, censorship, and skewed information. And the antidote to that, what we call a truth emergency, the antidote to this is more voice, more facts, and more education. And I don't mean the top-down educational propaganda that's fostered by so-called education reformists and test takers and outcome measurers and in like some kind of Frederick Taylor model, like a Taylorism where everything is measured in minutia. You know, some things can't be measured so clearly, and critical thinking is one, creative thinking is another. These are things that are really important to foster, and they aren't always exemplified as part of our educational system. And again, I think Project Censored is an organization that really seeks to try to draw out the best that we have in our society in terms of independent journalism, in terms of critical thinking, and in even a broader sense of just really convincing people to speak truth, so-called speak truth to power. But more than that, more than play into the binary dichotomy of us and them, really to just lead by example and demand that truths be told and facts come out. And when absolutely abominable statements are made from our government, from our leading media institutions, like you mentioned in your introduction, the continuous skewing and falsehood and framing that involves Venezuela and Chavez, the New York Times op-ed over a week ago talking about how the giving up on the Constitution. I mean, somehow this is accepted as sober discourse. Somehow this is accepted as these are the leading voices. You know, we've got a professor of law at Georgetown University that is arguing essentially that, hey, you know, the Constitution, sure, but, you know, it doesn't really work that way in the real world. Again, that's not only dangerous for the public, for the populace. It shows the brazen nature by which the plutocracy can now come forward and essentially suspend even the abstract principles in order to justify their otherwise heinous crimes against democracy. And I think, again, Project Censored has a long history of trying to call those things out and do so in a very collective way that we believe is in the public interest.
Mickey, I can't think of a greater problem than the public, most of the public, most people in America, simply not aware of the policies that their governments pursue. Doesn't matter whether it's run by Democrats, Republicans, or a bipartisan conspiracy, which is what it is most of the time. But these policies, they're misportrayed as things that are benefiting people. The hard reality is they harm the welfare of the vast majority of people enormously. And people don't know that things are done in their name. They're mischaracterized, they're causing so much harm, and because they do nothing about it, the policies continue, they get worse. It's astonishing. One year after another, one administration after another, I've written, and I believe, you can go back a few decades. My God, Lyndon Johnson was bad enough. Oh, we had the Great Society. Nixon was worse than Johnson. Carter was no jewel. I haven't written as much about Carter as other presidents, but his resume in office is nothing to cheer about.
Office is somewhat different, but you're on a roll there, and I'm afraid that the trajectory of your assessment as it continues through Reagan, Bush,
oh, everyone
Clinton,
was worse
Bush
than
Obama.
The previous one. Every single one was worse. I mean, Reagan was worse than Carter. Bush won and Reagan really won in the same thing. And then Clinton was worse than them. And Bush, too, was worse than them. And Obama was the worst of all. And in 2016, whoever replaces Mickey,
Obama.
Mickey, whoever replaces Obama, I guarantee will be worse than Obama. And, you know, people say, oh, Hillary Clinton. I seen some emails with someone who I absolutely know meant well, and she just yearned for the possibility that Hillary Clinton might become president in 2016. And I try to, I very briefly try to convince her that thinking that way is absolutely nonsensical. I've quoted people in the past calling her what she is. She's a war goddess. She's a war criminal multiple times over. I call her one of the worst secretaries of state America ever had. She matches the worst of John Foster Dulles, Condoleezza Rice, John Bolton. She just is a little smoother, but she could be mean and nasty when her claws come out. This is the kind of thinking that infects the population in America, Mickey. And because of this, the government gets away with murder, literally gets away with murder. There's an old Henry Ford quote. I forget exactly the wording, but something to the effect that I think he was talking about the U.S. financial system about a century ago, and he said something to the effect that if the American people knew a quarter of what was going on, there'd be a revolution in the morning. My God, that was then. Look how much worse things are today. People know nothing.
The interesting thing in terms of some of the specifics you mentioned in terms of more abrogation of constitutional authority coming from Congress, more of the unilateral executive and the complicity and significance of the courts in rubber stamping these changes, we just saw the Obama kill list given a pass, and basically not only is the court saying that, well, yes, you can have this, but no, you can't see it, and the public doesn't have a right to know about it. This is amazing. And if you take away a lot of the legalese and the obfuscatory language and break it down for folks to really, really understand, we're just talking about the complete justification of illegality, war crimes, crimes against humanity, violation of numerous articles of the UN Declaration of Human Rights. I mean, again, when you talk this way to people, it's as if you're the one speaking a strange foreign language. And I think we should remember that we saw this coming clearly, very clearly, and in the language that was used in the George W. Bush administration under people like Alberto Gonzalez, who said the Geneva Conventions were quaint. Professor John Yoo at UC Berkeley, really kind of one of the architects of the dismantling of constitutional principle, justification of violation of both domestic and international law. What we see again here, the trajectory from that just in recent rulings and recent congressional activities, we see continuous permission of warrantless wiretapping, warrantless searching of people's records. We're building one of the largest spy building data collection facilities in Utah. Big Brother isn't just here. He's moved in, and everybody else has been sort of pushed up into the attic or down into the basement. This kind of talk, when you break it down to people, it should resonate in such a degree as Henry Ford suggested, that if the people knew what was going on, if a quarter of the people even knew what was going on, there'd be revolution in the morning. Well, Stephen, I say, we're multiple decades past that, and we're multiple ruses further mired in the propagandistic drapery that has really attempted to shield the people from the truth. And the truth is that we are not a democracy. We are not a functioning republic. We have minor trappings and window dressing of democratic principle, perhaps in some local arenas. But because of and you've written about this subject a lot, because of the capitalist economy and the significance that money plays in American life and politics, much of the meaningful nature of actual grassroots activism and democratic activism, small d, is really washed away. It's really bought away, as we saw with Prop 37 in the state of California on GMO labeling. You know, Stephen, and by the way, there's still a dubious outcome here awaiting, as the ballots are continuously being counted and several million, 6 million votes seemingly went missing. we still have to face the fact that a vast majority of people in the state of California wanted to label, only label, genetically modified foods. 88% of Republicans said labeling was acceptable and was perfectly in line with the public's right to know. So, again, there is so much chicanery afoot and so much deception and so much criminality that it has been mainstreamed to the point to where people are either too cynical to raise a voice against it, or they're too bewildered to understand it because it flies in the face of their own principles. And this is a phrase that I'm sure you hear often when engaging in dialogue with people, that they look at you and say, no, the government would never do that. No, the business industries and the business people would never do that because it's not in their best interest. You know, we don't know what their best interest is because we're the people. We're not the 1%. We're not the elites of Wall Street. We're not the investment bankers. And we're not their plutocratic tools in the political establishment. So whatever ideals we the people project on the leaders of our society, that also is a curtain. It is a propagandistic curtain that allows these kinds of criminal behaviors to not only persist but unfortunately flourish, that really make what we're doing in American society a joke in terms of actual democratic republicanism, like how Jefferson might even have acknowledged it begrudgingly. So I'd say we're fairly far off the rails, but saying that, I'd also like to suggest that part of this culture of political cynicism is to censor and suppress very hard-won battles among civil rights issues, the public's right to know issues where there have been some gains made, also good news. Where we celebrate in Project Censored every year both Good News Chapter, and we also focus on some of the work done by Sarah Van Gelder and Yes Magazine that really shows that, you know, there's a lot of great communitarian things afoot. There are great collective movements afoot. There are great things happening in the world. There are people that are trailblazing ways to help people live healthier lives, better lives. These things are also happening, but we have such a steady diet, Stephen, of the gloom and doom that people sometimes fail to see the good things happening even in their own communities. And that's why we go back at Project Censored to the significance of media literacy and critical thinking, so that people don't just switch the channel or don't just turn off the TV and go somewhere else to believe somebody else, but people actually become critical observers of that which is going on around them and feel as though their investment in their communities and what goes on really means something and has a meaningful outcome. And I think one of the ways you can really try to foster that kind of a society is through education, through self-empowerment, but also self-empowerment is built up by collective and community endeavors. And I think that it's important that we remember that, and we certainly also highlight and cherish those notions in the Project Censored books every year. Andy Roth and I, with the Project Censored crew, came out with Censored 2013, Dispatches from the Media Revolution, in November. And in that book, we really try to champion both independent journalists, critical thinkers, and also fight censorship and propaganda and it's all of its guises, including Good News in important chapters on reframing the way we think. Ken Burroughs and Michael Negler, Michael Negler from the Meta Center for Nonviolence, talks about the creative tension and emerging future, facing the seven challenges of humanity. So Ken Burroughs at the Holistic Health Institute at San Francisco State University, he's really spent a lot of time thinking about different ways that we act, speak, and work together. So again, even though you and I know full well, Stephen, what we're up against and how far we are really spiraling away from any of our actual principles of liberty and freedom as we would understand it. But there is hope, and I don't mean the faux elixirs that are peddled by cynical political types, whether they be Obama or Reagan or Clinton, who all ran on hope tickets, better world, city on the hill, back to the American myths, and so forth. I think it's time for the myths to go to the dustbin of history, and it's time for us to collectively realize what we really can do as a people, and I think we need to get busy doing it. At the root of that, information, media literacy, critical thinking skills, and also developing a sense of pride and respect in what those things can bring to a society.
Mickey, I absolutely agree with you right down the line. And really, the future is us. You need to know what's going on. You need to know what benefits you. You need to know what harms you. It's organizations like Project Censored that literally are a beacon of truth. I mean, you spread it. You don't just spread it once a year in 25 top stories and related ones published in the annual book. You do it every day of the year on the Project Censored website. Brand new information on the website every day. The daily Censored site that Mickey, you, and Peter honored me by letting me post my own articles there. I'm delighted to do it. And we're both committed to the same thing. We want people, as many people as possible, to know what the devil is going on, because so much of this stuff affects our lives so personally. And the bottom line is very simple, Mickey. I say it all the time on this program. If we don't do something on our own behalf, nobody's going to do it for us. As far as hope goes, Mickey, that's the last line of defense. No matter how dark things look, I simply can't imagine abandoning hope. I cling to it. I cherish it. I tell other people to do the same thing. And I tell them to get off their duffs. Forget about the damn football games and the latest movies and the latest fashions and the rest of the bread and circuses, because you're watching your future dwindle away. It's incredible. It's not the America I grew up in. I reflect on it once in a while, Mickey. I want to take a break. I reflect on the America I grew up in, mainly in the 40s and the 1950s. It had lots of warts, but it was mirror opposite the way things are today. My goodness, I could spend a long time talking about it. But let's take a break, Mickey, and we'll come back and we'll get back to more of your comments. We'll be right back. Welcome back. On with Mickey Huff, director of Project Censored. You know, Mickey, aging has both its good side and its not so good side. You know, at age 78, you don't quite the body doesn't quite operate the same way it did decades earlier. But at the same time, over time, you gain wisdom. You make mistakes. Hopefully, you learn by them. You do better. Hopefully, you do. And I like to joke sometimes with friends and say, if I lived to be age 200, I think I'd be a genius. I know I would be if I lived to age 300 or 400. Every year I get smarter and realize all the stupid things I used to do, even when I was old enough to know better. We all do those things, but we can all discover enough of what's important early on to realize that the scoundrel media lie to you. They don't want you to know how gravely you're being harmed. They don't want you to know that government officials have a conspiracy to destroy the future of the great majority of people. They want them exploited. They want only wealth, power, privilege, and dominance to matter. They want to wage one imperial war after another. They want to bail out bankers. They want to screw everybody up. Well, and corporate favorites. You know the way the dirty game goes. Anybody who listens to programs like this and other ones that talk about the same things, that follow Project Censored, that follow the good parts of the alternative media, they know what's going on. Mickey, I'll just say this and you jump back in. Those of us who know what's going on have an obligation not only to follow the tenets that we believe in, but we need to spread the word, because more people are finding out, but still we're in the minority and they have the guns and we only have the spirit. I'm convinced that in the end, if the spirit is strong enough, there aren't enough guns to defeat it. I think that's what Henry Ford had in mind when he made his comment, and other people have made similar comments. It's up to us, and we can beat these guys if we decide we're not going to take it anymore. But by sitting back and doing nothing, boy, do they get the upper hand. And as we say, Mickey, things keep getting worse and worse and worse, and it's appalling how much worse they are now than a decade ago, than 2 decades ago, than 3 decades ago. when I reflect back, Mickey, I look back and I say, my God, I could go to a top school when it was affordable, and there was no such thing as student debt entrapment. America still fought imperial wars, but it was usually one at a time, maybe a proxy war here, a proxy war there. I mean, they're going on all over the place. U.S. Special Forces, they were out there. CIA operatives were out there. They're everywhere now. I mean, even the mainstream media talks about some of this stuff. Mickey, you jump back in.
Well, yes, Stephen. So many places to jump in, and as we oft remark at the end of the hour, so little time. Of course, Peter Phillips and I have the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio Friday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific time. PRN reruns our program every Monday at 11 a.m. New York time. And we cover these things week after week after week. You mentioned our blog and our websites and our book and everything else. We do this radio show every week, too, and we highlighted the Occupy Wall Street infiltration by the FBI. We talked at length with Seth Rosenfeld. We talked with Jason Leopold. Of course, Naomi Wolf had articles. There were several. Amy Goodman had some pieces on it. But we really delved into the notion of how this really is the COINTELPRO days, the old counterintelligence program, the infiltration into movements to discredit them. Of course, Story 4 in 2013's book this year is coming from a study from Mother Jones magazine on how the FBI was responsible for a majority of terrorist plots that they then subsequently thwarted. So this theme is writ large, and in some of the documents that were obtained by Freedom of Information Act requests, we see that the FBI is at least monitoring some type of conversations where people are talking about maybe assassinating OWS leadership. This is right back to COINTELPRO in the 60s. This is what happened, of course, with the collaboration between federal, state, and local law enforcement regarding people like Martin Luther King, Fred Hampton. I mean, the list goes on. These are state crimes against democracy, state and corporate crimes against democracy, which include the raping and looting of the public treasury and the public commonwealth. There is a deliberate effort, and you used a term that gets people in hot water all the time, that needs reclamation, that needs to be clearly defined, and I'm in agreement with your use of this term, by the way, Stephen. The term is conspiracy. There are many criminal conspiracies afoot. And we now, as we mentioned in the first half of the program, see more and more institutions, the legal system, etc., justifying or legalizing criminal conspiracies like kill lists for American citizens, like having the FBI not just monitor but infiltrate and potentially plan assassination of American citizens. We're clearly doing this to foreigners abroad with the drone strikes, drone programs, killing well over a million Iraqis in our so-called wars for liberation. I mean, honestly, the lies and deceit seem to have no end to them. And I'd like to go back to that term conspiracy because Lance DeHaven Smith and Peter Dale Scott, Peter Phillips, myself, several others, Graham McQueen, many have been talking about state and corporate crimes against democracy. We've been outlining clearly what these terms mean. And conspiracies are simply plans that people have afoot to achieve some objective that benefits themselves at the expense of others, which is, again, criminal in nature. And crimes against democracy are also demonstrable, like we see in Watergate, to election theft and fraud, right? Lying to the American public to get them to go to war, whether it be WMDs or Pearl Harbor. These are our Gulf of Tonkin. I mean, we could go off on the rails there, and eventually I do want to talk a little bit about historical censorship here. But again, riffing on this theme that you brought up about, you know, there really are conspiracies. But as Anton DeBeats writes in our book this year, he wrote a great piece in a volume that Susan Merritt, librarian, Susan Merritt put together, and Peter and I had the delight to be in it. It's the Research and Social Problems in Public Policy, Volume 19. It's a whole volume by Emerald Publications on government secrecy. And one of the biggest issues in America is the secrecy not only of the government, but how censorship is seen as a conspiratorial word. And the word conspiracy is used to target people that do censorship-type research so that they are dismissed a priori before even any evidence gets out. Anybody that talks about third rail issues, whether it be 9/11, election fraud, problems in the healthcare system with vaccines, again, I'm not talking about pie in the sky religious affairs and so forth, or Zionism into the world scenarios. I'm talking about hard factual evidence, like that the 9/11 Commission report was a fraud, that election fraud is very real. And Greg Palast's latest book talks about how that happened again in 2008 and is happening again here, how votes go missing, votes go uncounted. I mean, this is getting to the point to where it's common knowledge among people that read this literature. But we have to break through this wall of labeling, ad hominem attacks, red herring changing of subjects, straw person where we exaggerate. Well, anybody that says that 9/11 was an inside job is a lunatic because they talk about moonbeams and electromagnetic weapons and on and on and on. No, 9/11 is a problem because of the actual factual-based research that suggests that the United States government knew far, far more than it has ever let on. And we have historical precedent that shows that there are actual conspiracies, like the one to allow Pearl Harbor to happen. That was evidenced in Bob Stinnett's book and also many government documents. By the way, there is a whole new series now. This is interesting because a way of breaking through this kind of closed-minded thinking where we attack those who say unpopular truths, Oliver Stone and Peter Kuznick have a series on Showtime called The Untold Histories of the United States. Now, it doesn't go into some of all these issues that you and I may have discussed or people like James Petras or Peter Dale Scott would discuss, but it does go into some pretty serious issues in American history. And here's the key. It's being presented in a format that's widely available and digestible for all kinds of audiences, not just scholars, not just historians, not just journalists, not just intellectuals, but people that want to see. And I think that that's the kind of tipping point that we need in our culture for people to wake up and understand that it is very important to understand what's going on around us, and we can't do that without an accurate understanding of our past, of history. History provides great context for the present. And I had mentioned a scholar from the Network of Concerned Historians in Europe, Antoon de Beets, who wrote a piece that we republished in our book, and I want to bring it to people's attention because, I think it's fundamental nuts and bolts knowledge for people to begin to understand how censorship literally backfires. De Beets talks about three major issues of censorship. And the first major problem or epistemological paradoxes we see with censorship is, number one, censorship tends to be invisible and difficult to trace, right? And the less visible censorship is, the more effective it is, right? So when you have rabidly dictatorial cultures, it's understood that they suppress information. They don't just suppress information in dictatorial states. They shoot the messengers. They lock people up. They close down the media organizations. But in other societies that purport to have free press principles, censorship takes on many more insidious guises, whether it be self-censorship or, as de Beets points out, the lack of a legitimate forum to have sober, fact-based dialogue about the first major problem, that censorship is secretive. It is a very serious problem. He writes that in repressive societies, there's less information about more censorship, whereas in a democratic society, there is more information about less censorship. So we have these cyclic problems about how to even understand why we don't know the things we don't know. And Project Censored really is trying to call out, more of the architecture of censorship in a purportedly free press structure in a society that purports to have free speech and free expression. And it's interesting because those things do exist to certain degrees in places like the United States. But you really have to dig to find it, and you really have to be a critical observer. And I think that it's important also to call out the type of practices that dissuade people from being their own investigators. So just because somebody has personal foibles or has said things in the past that one may disagree with, that's not attacking that person for those issues is not a substitute for understanding or disagreeing with their current arguments. And I think that that is something that passes. It's a problem from right to left in this country, in the United States. I mean, where there are some extraordinarily vitriolic exchanges with people on the left who otherwise agree with each other about 90-odd percent of the way the world is operating and how the plutocracy is the juggernaut marching ever forward against human rights. But yet we bog down in the minutiae and say, well, because so-and-so thinks... because so-and-so has theories about healthcare and alternative medicine that I disagree with, they're a nutcase. Therefore, anything else they say is also crazy, and they're a conspiracy theorist. See, the CIA hatched the term conspiracy theorist through Operation Mockingbird in the 60s, specifically to discredit people that challenged the Warren Commission and the John F. Kennedy assassinations. We're in the 50th year since the JFK assassinations, and we still don't have transparency, and we still label anybody who challenges the efficacy of the Warren Commission as a nut job. Again, this is something that we are trying to deal with as well at Project Censored, is elevating discourse to a level of civility that doesn't allow for that weak sense critical thinking and doesn't allow for those type of propagandistic rhetorical tactics that are really dirty tricks that are played by pseudo-intellectuals that are more wedded to their own ideological conclusions than they are to the quest for truth and the quest for knowledge. And going back to James Madison, we need to arm ourselves with the power that knowledge gives, Stephen. And the only way we can do that is if we all stand up and call each other out on our blind spots, because we all have them. We all have them. And I don't need to remind you about how absolutely stellar programs like Democracy Now! And Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez had their blind spots on Libya, had their NATO line on Syria, have talked at length about the problems of rape in India without talking about this gang rape in Steubenville, Ohio, with a girl that was drugged. I mean, again, I'm not saying this pejoratively or negatively to debase or to bash someone to elevate myself or our organization. I'm saying we all need to help each other out. No one can tell all the stories, Stephen. This is back to this collective effort that Project Censored, I believe, exemplifies, is that when we all elevate each other, when we all try to help each other, we all end up winning out. We all really end up winning something. What do we win? We win dignity. What do we win? We win an elevated sense of transparency and a notion that we really can understand the things that are going on in our society, and we really can collectively work to address them. And I think, again, that all of this sort of that I've been rambling about for the last 7 or 8 minutes stems from, really in part, that one word you used. And I think that conspiracy is something that really needs to be understood outside of tinfoil hat culture, outside of the butt of late night jokes, and it certainly has no place in intellectual dialogue. But unfortunately, attacking people that challenge the status quo and orthodox thinking, the routinized defense that the establishment has is to attack, label, distort, and deny any legitimate debate. And at Project Censored, that's what we fight against every day.
Indeed so, Mickey, and certainly on this program and the stuff I write and the articles that you write and what you teach your students. I mean, this goes on and on. The problem is we're in the minority. The other guys have the big bucks, the deep pockets. They dominate the airways. We do the best we can with what we have, but of course it's vital to continue. Everything you said I agree with, and it really is deplorable what's going on. I wake up in the morning thinking about this. Mickey, I go to bed thinking about it. I somehow managed not to dream about it. I can't remember the last time I dreamed about this stuff, but I think it's coming sooner or later. I managed
Stephen,
to rest easy.
Well, it's not the
easy.
Stuff of dreams. It's the real world. This
it's
is the
real
world we face.
Well, you would think that the stuff you and I deal with all the time, it would keep us rolling and rolling all night because we realize the terrible harm that's being done, and it keeps getting worse and worse. And I would add, Mickey, that the only conspiracies I believe in are the true ones, and there sure as hell are plenty of those.
There are, Stephen, and I invite people, in again a collective way. Paul Ray and I, working in the middle section of our book on Truth Emergency, Deconstructing Narratives of Power to Reclaim the Common Good, I mean, this is really about understanding the past, how it relates to the present, so we can construct and navigate a better map for our future, so we know where we come from, where we are, and where we're going. And I want to remind, again, people, the very significance of how our ideas and attitudes are shaped, right? They're shaped by our culture. Our norms are shaped by our culture. We need to also be critical thinkers enough to think outside of those and challenge those orthodoxies. And Michael Parenti reminds us, a book he wrote years ago called History as Mystery, he writes, those engaged in the manufacturing of history often introduce distortions at the point of origin well before the history is written or even played out. This initial process of control is not usually left to chance, but is regularly pursued by interested parties who are situated to manipulate the record, right? And this is something that we really need to think about. Actually, you go back and look at the 1980s, William Casey, director of the Central Intelligence Agency, was quoted coming out of a meeting, "We'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false." I would add to that and say, or everything the American public believes is irrelevant or distorted, or everything the American public believes is utterly mundane and trivial. Who the Kardashians are dating and marrying. We do this junk food news and news abuse chapter every year. Who's the new rage South Korean rapper dissing American foreign policy? I mean, again, these distractions are really they're part of a multiple frontal assault by the state, the establishment, and the corporatocracy to conceal their crimes and their state and corporate crimes against democracy and against the people. And against, even only collectively, can we really address these issues and these problems. And I know Peter Phillips will be on your show tomorrow, and I know Andy Roth will be on, our associate director, next week on the 12th with you. And Andy, you should ask Andy about his concept of shifting baselines and our concept of unhistory, that we're uncensoring our unhistory. I did a great chapter, I think, with Laurel Krauss in this year's book on Kent State by looking at, again, this is right out of Occupy Wall Street, FBI, COINTELPRO. In 1970, the FBI was at the Kent State campus. They were potentially involved with the ROTC building burning prior to the guard coming to campus and killing four people there and wounding nine others with live M1 rifles. There was an FBI informant on campus. He did have to turn his gun over to the authorities. Terry Norman has never been questioned. He has never been sequestered. Even Dennis Kucinich in Congress presented new forensic evidence to the Justice Department, the Obama Justice Department under Eric Holder, that after a year refused to review it, refused to open the case. Justice, 42 years later, still not served. And again, the excuses given there were, well, we thought there were snipers. We thought there was danger. We had to fire against these defenseless people on a college campus. Look, Nixon and Haldeman and others were talking that week with Governor Rhodes of Ohio about how they needed to make a statement to suppress the anti-war movement because Nixon admitted he was illegally bombing Cambodia, and they said they needed this kind of a thing to happen. Look, that's not a conspiracy theory. That's understanding real politique. That's understanding how power works and the power elite work. And here we see Occupy Wall Street now being subject to these brutal assaults. You know, and it's ironic that while in Egypt, our State Department lauds and our White House lauds the bravery of democratic activism post-Mubarak, while we simultaneously shoot veterans in the street with tear gas canisters like Scott Olson in Oakland, California. Again, Stephen, these are very real issues, very real problems. They also show our problems of shifting baselines and what we continue to accept, how we seemingly accept things now that we would never as a society have accepted decades ago. And it really helps to uncensor our unhistories, the stories, the untold histories, to help give us context in the present, to help us understand the architecture of censorship in the present as it currently exists, so we have the tools to combat it, so we have the tools to work together to respectively construct a type of dialogue in our media that is educational and meaningful for all of our people.
And he told Mickey, my goodness, the hour literally has flown by. We've got a couple of minutes left. I took up the beginning of the program. We've got about a minute or so. We'll know when the music starts up that I have to sign off, Mickey. Until then, whatever else that's on your mind that you want to pass on the listeners, before I get you back for an encore, you've been on before, we'll get you back again for sure. Just a couple of final comments, Mickey.
Well, you know, Stephen, again, it's easy to get caught up in a lot of the problems, and I know that I'm just as guilty of that as others, but I want to remind listeners that you can go to projectcensored.org, you can go to our Daily Censored blog, you can see the research we're doing year-round, the vetting of the stories that we see year-round. We have a process of voting that takes place on the stories every spring. We've been putting this book out since 1993 with Seven Stories Press in New York. And, you know, I invite people to come and check out the work that Project Censored does. Tune into our radio show, whether at PRN or KPFA in Pacifica. And, you know, feel free to send us emails, mickey@projectcensored.org, andy@projectcensored.org, peter@projectcensored.org. If you've got story ideas, if you've got constructive criticism, if you've got stories to tell, let's work together, Stephen. Let's really work together with everybody. And again, I invite your listeners to check us out, projectcensored.org. Follow us, Project Censored, on Facebook or Twitter. And really, you know, keep being in the loop. Be media democracy in action.
Oh, absolutely, Mickey. And I'll just end very quickly by saying, I wrote an article about this, and I've said it a couple of times, and I'll say it one more time to end the program today. I actually believe that currently, right now, and it'll get worse, but right now, we're literally living through the most perilous time in world history. Where really the future of humanity is on the line. The program is over. I've got to sign off. I'll end with that thought and just remind listeners to tune in tomorrow, same time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Mickey, my great thanks for coming on. We'll continue this with Peter tomorrow. We'll do it
Thank
with
you.
Andy. We'll do it again when I get you back on. Many, many thanks, Mickey. And make Progressive Radio News Hour a regular habit. What else? And PRN, of course. Join us.